Hey everybody, welcome into the Niners Wire podcast. I'm Kyle Madsen, along with Niners Wire editor-in-chief Chris Biederman, along with Niners Wire contributor Rob Lauder and Niners Wire contributor Vince Fassoni. Let's get right into it because we got a lot to talk about here. Colin Kaepernick starting. He restructured his deal. Chip Kelly may or may not have lied about whether that restructuring had to do with whether Kaepernick would start. We'll preview what we're expecting from Kaepernick against the Bills, and we'll also talk about Trent Baalke and whether he is around for next season or if he even makes it through this season. So, Chris, can you talk a little bit about that restructure for us?
Yeah, so basically what the restructured contract does now for the 49ers and Colin Kaepernick is rip up the final 4 years of that six-year deal he signed in 2014. So what it does is it gets rid of the injury guarantee for injury only that Kaepernick was facing in the spring. So what that means is if Kaepernick were to get hurt again like he did last year and be unable to pass a physical in April, his money would have been fully guaranteed. If he was healthy, the 49ers could have released him, but it was a big financial risk for the team either way. For Kaepernick, what he gets is he gets the freedom to either come back to the 49ers in 2017 with a player option, or he can decide to become an unrestricted free agent. And I think it's pretty clear that Kaepernick doesn't have a great relationship with the 49ers front office. And that was made evident by his trade request last February. So Colin Kaepernick and Trent Baalke don't get along very well. It's clear Colin Kaepernick's real advocate right now would probably be Chip Kelly. Certainly much more so than the chief contract negotiator, Parag Murate. So it's a situation where the ball is now in Kaepernick's court. Kaepernick has leverage now to leave the 49ers, and what he gave up was the final 4 years of that deal, and it seems pretty clear that Kaepernick would rather be happy than keep getting that $20 million, and let's face it, he probably wasn't going to get that money anyway based on the way the last couple of years have gone. So Kaepernick gets the remainder of his roster bonuses, $2 million in total through the end of the year. All that money is guaranteed. So before it wasn't guaranteed, the 49ers could have made him inactive or released him, and the remaining whatever was left on that $2 million wouldn't have been his, and he would have hit the streets. So essentially what happens now is the 49ers don't have to worry about Colin Kaepernick getting hurt, and thus the question is, was it imperative that the 49ers get this restructure done before getting Kaepernick back into the starting lineup? And Chip Kelly said last week, you know, the contract has nothing to do with his decision or the timing or any of it, but it certainly is pretty convenient for the 49ers that the restructure happens the same week that he goes back into the starting lineup.
Well, yeah, and the funny part is that Chip Kelly, it just seemed, I guess, unlike him to set himself up in the way that he would just pretend like he had absolutely no idea what was going on with that contract. And, you know, he's the head coach. Not only is he the head coach of a team, but you're talking about the most important position on the team in the quarterback. You know, a guy that he had just decided was going to be the new starter, and then he's going to pretend like he doesn't have any idea what the contract status is. So that was kind of laughable. Chalk that up as a low point for Chip, just because he seems like a very intellectual guy. And that's pretty easy to see through. So I think he definitely knew what was going on. I think he had to have known that that contract was going to get signed, or the chances were very good for him to even name Kaepernick the starter in the first place, because I don't believe they would have allowed him to start if they thought they were still on the hook for next season.
Yeah, the Chip Kelly thing is, I kind of almost admire the way he just shamelessly has no problem playing dumb and just for these kinds of things. It's like he'll come out and say, I believe the exact quote was when he's talking about Rex Ryan with, you know, all of his coming out. And
he made reference to the mole that Rex exactly, Ryan yeah. had.
Right, saying about this mole thing. And I just kind of find it funny to imagine Chip Kelly, you know, sitting there thinking, well, you know, Rex Ryan has moles in NFL locker rooms and all this. And I don't know, it just seems very, and then he's so matter of fact about it that it seems like he's playing dumb. And it's, I don't know, it's funny. But aside from that, yeah, Kaepernick's starting, and it seemed that was going to be totally contingent on the contract signing.
I think part of it was Chip Kelly probably not wanting to mess up those negotiations, right? If they're negotiating that new contract and he comes out and says, yeah, he'll start whenever that contract gets restructured, I feel like that doesn't do anybody any good.
No, you're right. And I wouldn't expect Chip Kelly to say, you know, well, we want to start him, but we have to wait on this contract negotiation to get done. What Chip Kelly did do was say, and I pointed it out over the weekend, or I guess it was early this week. It was Monday. He said, well, I played Kaepernick in the season opener, those three snaps. Otherwise, you know, that completely proves the conspiracy wrong. And then Kelly called it a conspiracy, the fact that people were pointing out that the contract restructure had everything to do with him getting back onto the field. You know, Kelly kind of doubled down on it. He said, well, obviously, because I had Kaepernick hand the ball off three times in a 28-0 game in the season opener, that that Kaepernick's contract had nothing to do with it. When clearly, you know, I think anyone with a reasonable intellect can look at the entire situation and say, like, yeah, Kaepernick's contract had a lot to do with it. There's no way Jed York was going to risk $14.5 million of his money, regardless of how much, or the team's money, I should say, no matter how much cap space the 49ers have in playing a quarterback that's coming off three surgeries, that's underweight compared to what he used to be. You know, that's just not how the 49ers have ever operated. And then once you saw the news coming from national reporters on Friday, you pretty much knew that that's exactly where this was going, that the 49ers were going to make sure that this contract was going to be done before Kaepernick was on the field. So with Kelly, I mean, you heard things along these same lines coming out of Philadelphia. He had certain instances with the media where the media and the writers didn't necessarily think he was entirely forthright with situations, and that's fine. I mean, I get, you know, it's Kelly's prerogative. He has an agenda. He has things he can and can't say. He has people he can't throw under the bus. He has, you know, potential contract restructures that he can't talk about. But what he did do was double down on the situation and say, you know, I played him three snaps and he's handed off to Mike Davis three times. And that ultimately proves that everyone's conspiracy theory is wrong. And, you know, for what it is, it's a little bit patronizing, but that's just how things are going to go. And that's really why it's interesting, is because it's really the first instance like that Kelly's had of any significance so far with the writers here. And it's something we've been kind of on guard for, heading in, because we knew all the drama that followed him in Philadelphia.
I feel like he's almost daring, not daring, that's a bad word. I feel like he's just always needs to follow everything up. Like, he wants to follow it up with like a wink. Like, he's telling you what he needs to say, but at the end he could very easily wink and you'd realize that he's telling you to read between the lines on the fact that there's certain things that he has to say and certain things that he can't say. Otherwise he'd be throwing somebody under the bus. And he says them in a way where you listen to it a couple times, and then as the situation plays out, you go back and listen to it, and you're like, okay, that's what he was obviously trying to say. He just can't say it. Because he's a smart guy. He knows what he can and can't do.
It kind of makes you feel like, when you're hearing him say this, like a kid in a classroom where your teacher is saying something and you know it's obviously not true, but they just have to say it, you know, that kind of thing. You know, like you ask your teacher about the 60s and he won't like tell you about it or something like that. I don't know. It's kind of funny, but it's not, it's overall very, difficult to read sometimes, you know, read between the lines.
So we've got Kaepernick starting, whether Kelly was lying or not is kind of in the past. He's starting now. Deal got restructured. Let's look ahead. Cap starting in Buffalo. I personally think that it's going to go a lot like it has the last few weeks. I don't think we're going to see like a brand new offense or a completely different like 2011 version of Kaepernick. He's obviously going to be rusty. The Bills have a good defense. What are you guys expecting from Kaepernick?
First and foremost, the 49ers are going to try to take more shots downfield. I think ultimately that was the biggest thing hampering Blaine Gabbert, and he was, you know, Pro Football Focus does all the stats, and they had Gabbert as the second worst quarterback in the NFL. He was 4 of 19 for 111 yards, one touchdown. Oh, sorry, I'm reading Blake Bortles' stats. He was the worst. So Gabbert was 2 of 13 for 52 yards, a touchdown and an interception on throws 20 yards downfield or longer. And the interception, obviously, was that brutal play against the Cowboys, which ultimately could be the defining moment, I think, in the 49ers season so far.
Because I feel like we should apologize to Blake Bortles real quick. You know, he could turn in, and we're not trying to to throw shade on the Niners Wire podcast. I mean, it was just...
Let Blake Bortles know that was Niners Wire editor-in-chief Chris Peterman that said that.
I deserve Thank you. That.
Random shot.
But so Blake Bortles was the worst quarterback in the NFL on throws of 20 yards downfield or longer with a 29.4 passer rating, right? Blaine Gabbert's was 37.3. So as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, that play against the Cowboys, I think is going to be the turning point in the season. Because if Gabbert hits that pass to Torrey Smith that was ultimately intercepted by Maurice Claiborne, the 49ers have a good chance to win that game. They go up in the fourth quarter, they get some momentum, and then if they win that game, I think the team has an entirely different feel going into that Arizona game, and they would have been 2-2 before that Cardinals game. And going against Drew Stanton, if they come out with a win in that game, then we're sitting here talking about the 3-2 49ers and Blaine Gabbert turning things around and going into Buffalo and trying to get the team's first road win. Instead, they're 1-4 and they're going through a quarterback change. So back to the original point, I think one of the biggest reasons why they brought Kaepernick in is because he's going to stretch the field a little bit more. I think the 49ers running game has been hampered badly by the fact that opposing defenses are just loading the box. They're having one safety high and that safety's shading over towards Torrey Smith, and the other teams are saying, look, we know Blaine's not going to beat us downfield, so we're just going to focus on Carlos Hyde. Now with Kaepernick back there, who's a little bit better at throwing the deep ball than Gabbert, the defenses have to think about the 49ers going deep, which could open up things for Hyde, and ultimately Hyde's going to be the bread and butter of the offense. But I think decongesting the box by being able to push the ball downfield is going to be the key mandate for Kaepernick in this first start.
Well, a lot of things people don't realize is it's not even, obviously you want the completions, you want the big deep plays, you want the splash plays and the touchdowns, but the fact that Blaine Gabbert wasn't even taking these shots has a huge impact on the offense. He wasn't even attempting them, they weren't falling incomplete, and you know, the one this season that I can even remember him attempting, like you said, was picked off. So hopefully, going back to that, Kaepernick, is they're at least dialing up plays that are going to make him take those shots just so the defense has to even remotely respect it.
Yeah, and this offensive line is going to be a big factor here. I mean, I know they did give up, was it 6 or 7 last week for Gabbert?
Seven sacks.
That was a red check on an otherwise pretty good report card for them this season. Decent, a lot better than last year. A lot of people are bringing that up that I've seen in reasons of why Kaepernick will perform better this year. So, I mean, yeah, it's going to be good to see what he has. I mean, it'll certainly be a lot more shots downfield just regardless of their success, which will be exciting. I know for myself personally, I've been almost nervous to see Kaepernick get out there because I just don't want him. I'd want him to be good so bad. And if he does, you know, bring something to the table, it's going to be interesting now with going forward since he has the free agent option next year.
The sack thing is interesting too, because I would argue that Gabbert's best attribute as a passer is his ability to get rid of the ball quickly. And part of that, as Rob said, is throwing short of the sticks, identifying his checkdowns early. But that's really his best trait. And in this offense, I think you watched it in training camp. One of the things Kelly really harps on is getting rid of the ball quickly, and that's obviously helped the offensive line before Thursday. Coming into that game, they allowed 3 sacks in 4 games before allowing 7 to the Cardinals. So I'll be interested to see if Kaepernick can get rid of the ball as quickly and find where his outlets are as quickly as Gabbert did. Obviously, Gabbert probably did it too much to a fault, and you know, we always talk about how often he threw short of the sticks on third down. But you wonder, too, if how often Gabbert avoided really bad plays for the offense by holding on to the ball too long and taking a sack. And I think that's arguably the biggest difference between Kaepernick and Gabbert is, you know, when Kaepernick really started to not play well in 2014 and into 2015, he was just holding on to the ball way too long. And when that happens, you know, he abandons his reads, he starts to scramble, and teams kind of figured out how to contain him within the pocket and spy him with linebackers and things like that. And so you wonder if that's going to be an area where Kaepernick got better during his time off since the last time he was a starter, or if it's going to be just as bad as it was. And if it is, it's not going to bode well for him going forward in Kelly's offense, because Kelly wants his quarterbacks to get rid of the ball so quickly.
It's interesting, going back to the conversation we had last podcast, we were talking about a good place for Kaepernick to start, and Buffalo Bills are currently fourth in the NFL in total sacks, just behind the Cardinals with 17. So it really, in terms of him holding on the ball too long and opening himself up for those sacks, it doesn't, at least now, bode well for him and kind of what he's going to face. Going back to what we were talking about him, Tampa Bay Buccaneers being a safe landing spot, they're all the way down at 22nd. So, you know, still kind of feel like they jumped the gun a little bit as far as starting Kaepernick, but at the same time, it'll be interesting to see how he should be dealing with some pretty significant pressure.
It'll be interesting to see him against the Bills, because the Bills have been a tough team to figure out, for me at least. I mean, I remember back week two, I think it was, when they played against the Jets, and Fitzpatrick was throwing all over them. Like, it was Darby, and I can't remember who their other cornerback was. They looked like they were just getting absolutely torched by Fitzpatrick. So, and it was mostly downfield stuff. So, I mean, Kaepernick could potentially look good here, but then you have, you know, other stuff. They shut out the Patriots, but obviously Brissett was...
not Brady.
Not Brady, yeah. And they kept the Cardinals and the Rams to about, I think, less than 20 each. But, I mean, Kaepernick does have a chance to theoretically look good here as a throwing quarterback, I think.
Well, and getting away from Kaepernick a little bit, when talking about the Bills, you got to look at their offense as well, going against the Niners defense. And their offense has been running the ball at a torrid pace. LeSean McCoy, I think, is fourth in the NFL in rushing yards, and the 49ers are the worst run defense in the NFC. So I'm personally expecting a huge game from LeSean McCoy, and I'm not sure how the 49ers are going to be able to slow them down.
Yeah, and Buffalo Bills, I just switched that up when you mentioned that, and they're third in rushing right now. So given how bad the 49ers run defense is, that's matchup number one right there.
I will say, and all that is true about the running game and how bad the 49ers have been defending the run, but I will say, I don't know that I've seen anything from a Rex Ryan team these last few years to believe that they're going to handle success well and take care of business against a team they should beat at home. And the 49ers are that team, frankly. But, you know, does Rex Ryan's team that won three games in a row, is it going to be mature enough to come home and really start to get in a rhythm now and win games that it should win? Or is it a team, the classic example of an NFL team that's punching above its weight early in the season before falling off? So, you know, if the 49ers can avoid turnovers and they can run the ball, I give them a puncher's chance to keep that game competitive. I think I told you guys earlier in the week that, you know, I kind of envision this one looking a lot like week two in Carolina, in the sense that the 49ers should, if they come out and play well in the first half, they'll be in that game. Whether or not they make some of those backbreaking mistakes that they made in Carolina will ultimately be the difference. I think, you know, I don't know if the Bulls or if the Bills are a good enough team to just assume that they're going to beat a team that they're easily favored over. They're so often with these Rex Ryan teams, they've come out and just laid an egg once they started to feel themselves, which the Bills are doing after winning three straight games. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. And you know, whenever a team starts a new quarterback, that first game always seems like an outlier. It always seems a little bit weird. The offense is going to be a little bit different no matter what Chip Kelly says. You know, there are going to be things that the Bills aren't prepared for. Kaepernick might have different tendencies than before. He hasn't started for a year. So the Bills are going to be looking at an entirely different situation playing the 49ers. And maybe, you know, maybe it's going to be enough for the 49ers to keep this game competitive. I wouldn't pick them to win. They haven't done anything this year to deserve the benefit of the doubt in terms of winning a 10 a.m. start in 3,000 miles away. But I do give them a puncher's chance, just because I don't fully trust the Bills yet.
Yeah, the Bills, they have won three in a row. But like we just said, there's been some kind of odd circumstances. They got five turnovers from the Cardinals. They got to face Jacoby Brissett when they played the Patriots. And they got to face Case Keenum the next week when they played the Rams. So it's going to be interesting. I'm really interested to see how the 49ers offense looks. They started going to the pistol a little more last game. You guys think that they'll employ that even more with Kaepernick, given how comfortable he is with it?
Absolutely. I think like Chris was saying earlier, Kaepernick hasn't started in over a year. So it's going to be all about how comfortable they can make him calling the plays that involve the least amount of work on his part as far as reads, quick plays that, you know, one or two reads deep that involve him getting the ball out quickly. They're going to have to avoid the pretty effective pass rush of the Bills. So I think they're going to try and make things to include the pistol as familiar as they can for Kaepernick and kind of, you know, ease him back in.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what he does in this system as opposed to just the kind of Greg Roman thing, which seriously overcomplicated things, obviously. So I think it's going to be a good spot for Kaepernick. Whether or not he succeeds, there's a lot of factors at play there. But I think that just based on the merit of the system right now on paper, he should look more comfortable, at least, in Kelly's system.
Yeah, and this is going to be the first time that, I mean, aside from Michael Vick, this is going to be the first time that Kelly's had a real dual threat quarterback in the NFL. He didn't, you know, say what you want about Michael Vick and his inconsistencies and his and how turnover prone he was and getting injured earlier in Philadelphia. Kaepernick really represents everything that we all thought Chip Kelly would want in a quarterback when he first came into the NFL in 2013. And now you look at it's crazy to look at these last few years and see what's happened. If Kelly in 2013, you know, if we all would have known that Kelly, the genius coach at Oregon, was going to have Colin Kaepernick, the NFL would have been on its ear and everyone would have been going crazy at the idea. And now a few years later, Kelly loses the job and Colin Kaepernick has his fall from grace and struggles for a couple seasons and gets hurt. And now these two are matched up and then everything is completely changed, right? Like, we don't have these high expectations now that we would have had a couple years ago. But what about, you know, what about the possibility that, you know, this does hit that ceiling? You know, I don't think it's a distinct possibility, but I also think you have to look at what Colin Kaepernick does in the running game, particularly with Carlos Hyde created by Chip Kelly. And how that could affect the game. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm not giving up any hope that that Kaepernick can't come back and make this thing work and make the 49ers a more functional offense. I'm not counting on it. I think if the 49ers don't play well and they're too far behind the chains and they're getting called for penalties and Kaepernick's holding on to the ball too long, that they're going to run into issues. But I also think there's a possibility that, at least in this first game, that Kaepernick could hold on to the ball on some of those zone reads and make some Bills defenders look bad in space if he's playing well. I think Carlos Hyde could potentially have a big game if the Bills are too concerned with defending Kaepernick. So there are things about Kelly and Kaepernick as a tandem now that are intriguing for sure. But the way things have gone for the 49ers, particularly on defense, it's really hard to be optimistic. And Kaepernick doesn't exactly have the greatest show on turf around him either in terms of pass catchers and things like that. So I'm still intrigued. I think given the way the season was going in 1-4 and how boring this team was looking, I think now, given what we know about Kelly and Kaepernick, it's definitely taken an intriguing turn this year.
Well, at least they've got, you know, right from the start, they've got alliteration going for them. You know, Kelly and Kaepernick sounds really good, just rolling off the tongue. So they can start with that, and hopefully they can build on that. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, the moment Kaepernick steps on the field, a defense's first thought of him is his ability to run. And while Kelly has said multiple times that he doesn't want his quarterback scrambling, if you're going to run an offense that routinely features zone reads, then your quarterback needs to have the threat of a big run. And while Blaine Gabbert was plenty athletic, I think that the defense will take Kaepernick a lot more seriously, and it's going to make Kelly's offense seem a lot more legitimate in the fact. And then you couple that with the obvious fact that Kaepernick is going to throw further than the sticks and further downfield far more often than Gabbert was. So I think, in the bigger sense of things, it gives Kelly's offense a more legitimate chance to succeed than Gabbert did.
You don't want to say necessarily that now that the injury clause is off the table. I mean, obviously, Chip is not going to, you know, want his quarterback to be in a position to get hurt or anything like that. But I think Gabbert was already running like about, I mean, I think he ran 12 times last game or something like that, close to that. He's averaging, you know, high up there an amount of rushing attempts. So, I mean, Kaepernick you know, we might see Green Bay, not necessarily volume stats, but like that amount of, you know, dual threat ability. And that's pretty exciting just to think about that he has that at his disposal right now.
So let's go ahead and talk about, we're talking a lot about this Sunday, and we'll obviously cover that a little more once the game actually happens. But I want to look ahead to next year and maybe just ahead a couple of weeks, depending on how this whole thing shakes out. But we're reaching a point where the 49ers are 1-4 in back-to-back years. They've been abysmal both years. They're not like competitive. And it's starting to look like this team needs an overhaul at the top. Trent Baalke's drafts have kind of left the team where it is now. And we're at a point where you can't point at the head coach anymore. You have to look at the roster. And when you're looking at the roster, it's not a bunch of good players playing badly. It's just a whole bunch of kind of average guys. And when you have a bunch of average to below average players, this is what you get. And when you do that, you kind of have to look at Trent Baalke. Is there any chance he's around for next draft or around for the rest of this season even?
I have a hard time seeing Baalke coming back because I think you can look at the weaknesses on the roster from last year and you say, okay, the 49ers receivers weren't particularly good. The pass rush needed an upgrade. You could say they needed to add depth at inside linebacker, even starting caliber talent at inside linebacker. And obviously the quarterback situation. And, you know, we're here after five games and the 49ers are playing their backup quarterback. The wide receivers didn't get any upgrade at all, really. The inside linebacker depth is a huge issue, and the pass rush has been an issue, albeit without Aaron Lynch in the first four games. But these are things, and Trent Baalke has been so stubborn in terms of drafting and sticking to his board and not worrying about team needs, that I think now that, you know, it's finally coming home to roost. Like, the 49ers under Chip Kelly are not going to be able to field an effective offense with any consistency without any good receivers outside of Torrey Smith. You know, they're not going to be a contender without a legitimate pass rush. And I think, as it's proven, particularly now going forward, that Navarro Bowman is going to be coming off an Achilles tear. If he's back for next training camp, or if it's going to take, you know, six or seven games in the next season, the 49ers badly need some depth at inside linebacker, because I think it's pretty clear Nick Ballore and Michael Wilhoyd and Gerald Hodges are not the answer. So what the 49ers did was, you know, they didn't address any of these positions in the draft until at least late last year. I mean, Rashard Robinson, the rookie cornerback in the fourth round who they took, looks like he's going to be a really good player. The early returns on him are really good and really promising. But in the third round, you take Will Redmond, who hasn't played a snap yet, coming off an ACL tear. I know, Rob, you talked a lot about the ACL guys Baalke's drafted in your piece that you wrote this week. So there are just all these different factors, and Eric Armstead hasn't played particularly well. DeForest Buckner has been good, but he's still only a rookie, and you can't have a rookie defensive lineman lead your defensive line in snaps. That's not an indicator for success. So there are so many things looking at this roster that you say, why didn't they draft a receiver? Why didn't they invest more in the quarterback situation? Dak Prescott went two picks after the 49ers took Robinson. And you know, so there are all sorts of things you can look at. And when building this roster and the fact they didn't add any free agents of significance, and they only want to pay a certain price for free agents, you got to say, well, are you really trying to win, or are you really trying to just get players you like and hope things fall into place? And I don't think Baalke has been good at this whole team building thing for a couple years now. He inherited a roster that was really good in 2011. And ever since then, with all those players leaving after 2015, he's struggled to replenish the roster. He's had his bright spots. Rashard Robinson, Trent Brown, those guys look like they're going to be good players, but there simply hasn't been enough of those guys, and he hasn't built a roster from top to bottom that makes you feel confident going forward, and I think for that reason, he's probably not going to be around next year.
Piggybacking off what you said, Chris, I just think he's a great roster, like, maintainer. Like, yeah, if you already have the pieces in place, he's good at kind of filling the small gaps here and there. But as far as overhauling the entire roster, I don't think he can do that.
Well, and at the same time, you have to look at the fact that he hasn't drafted well. we just covered that. And he's drafted a total of 7 ACL players, going all the way from the 2nd, 3rd, and all the way back until the 7th round. Literally none of them have really hit. Carradine and Reese are the only ones that are still on the roster, and Redmond is on injured reserve. He's drafted 61 players, and he's only seen 2 Pro Bowls and an All-Pro nomination. So he doesn't have the draft to hold on to, at least not now. And then if you go back and look at all the interpersonal problems, he was kind of that apparently where the traction was between Harbaugh and the front office. And now you're hearing so much about the problems between Kaepernick and Balke. And it kind of starts to seem like maybe these other factors aren't the issue, and it all ties back to Trent Balke. And the biggest part with me, and we mentioned this off the air, is that the 49ers are coming up to an offseason where they're going to be able to tempt a lot of very promising suitors as far as a general manager goes, because they're going to have somewhere between like $90 and $110 million in free salary cap in 2017. And that the opportunity to basically build a team from the ground up, starting with the draft and then with all that money in free agency, is going to be really tempting for what I would think are a lot of great GMs. So to me, it seems really unlikely that they're going to place that amount of power in a Trent Baalke that has already proven that he really can't handle it under the best of circumstances in terms of the roster he was already given.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really comes down to, do you trust him to do his job this year, which is, you know, like you guys said, overhauling the roster, and particularly the offense, where he needs to draft at 2 of the most important positions, quarterback and wide receiver, which he has shown not only an unwillingness to attack in the earlier rounds, but also doesn't have an eye for those Dak Prescotts or whoever it may be. So I just think the answer is just no. You don't trust him to do it.
I mean, look, it's a quarterback-driven league. The one quarterback Trent Baalke has drafted, not including Jeff Driscoll, who now plays for the Cincinnati Bengals, is Colin Kaepernick. And the 49ers, with Baalke, went into the season without a plan B in regards to Kaepernick and the quarterback situation. There's no way that you could feel comfortable going into a season saying, yeah, we're gonna compete for a division title in the NFC West with Blaine Gabbert as our starting quarterback. And the 49ers went into their whole situation with Colin Kaepernick in the trade with the Broncos without a contingency plan if the trade didn't work out. So they were stuck with having to start Gabbert to start the regular season, mostly because Kaepernick wasn't healthy during the entire offseason. And now they're forced to deal with a situation where Kaepernick is probably not going to be back next year before he even starts a game. So ultimately, the quarterback position, just like every other position on the roster, is Trent Baalke's responsibility. And there's no way you can look at this and say he's done a good job handling the quarterback situation. They could have had Sam Bradford, who's playing really well with Minnesota. They could have maneuvered in the draft to take a young quarterback. Dak Prescott was staring him right at the face, right in the face in the 4th round. I mean, there are things that they could have done to address the position to put them in a much better spot. And in addition to the quarterback position itself, is putting players around the quarterback to help him. I mean, if you're comfortable with Blaine Gabbert being your starting quarterback, then you need good pass catchers, and the 49ers don't have those. They have Torrey Smith, who's a complementary piece to an offense that requires a whole lot more. Like Anquan Boldin is a perfect complement to Torrey Smith because he's a classic possession receiver in the slot. And I will give credit to Baalke that Jeremy Curley was a good signing, and obviously he's panned out and he leads the team in receiving. But I'd also make the argument that was a guy that Chip Kelly and Curtis Modkins found based on their familiarity with him. So I just don't know what confidence you can have in going with Baalke next year going forward and trying to rebuild this receiving core, find a pass rusher that you can depend on, and build this roster the way it needs to be built, because he's had plenty of chances, and the sample size on a lot of these guys is big enough now to where you can say, all right, it's a young team, but these guys have had time to step up, and they simply haven't. So I think it's time for the team to move on from Trent.
All right, I think that's a good place for us to cut this off. Everybody good? Everyone feel like they're in a good place heading into the weekend?
Outstanding.
I think so.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I think so.
Beautiful. I love that. Well, hey, thank you guys. I had a great time in this chat. I hope you guys did as well, and I hope everybody listening enjoyed our chat. This has been the Niners Wire podcast. Make sure to check us out on Twitter at the Niners Wire. We're also on Facebook. I just go ahead and search Niners Wire on there and you can find us as well. And of course, NinersWire.com is where you can find all the latest 49ers news and updates. For Niners Wire editor-in-chief Chris Biederman, contributor Rob Lauder, contributor Vince Fasoni, I'm Kyle Madsen. Thank you everybody for listening. This has been the Niners Wire podcast. We are out.